What lessons can a global pandemic teach us about another global threat, climate change? Joining us is Phil Duffy, President and Executive Director of the Woods Hole Research Center. Welcome.
Well, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you bet. Now, why should we be thinking about climate change in the midst of a global pandemic?
I guess I wouldn't go so far as to say people should be thinking about climate change. Of course, I think about it because that's what I do. Naturally, folks are distracted by coronavirus, and its very rapid development makes it a continuous distraction. So it's taking up a lot of people's mental bandwidth right now. But I hope that in moments of reflection, we can ask, okay, what can we learn from this experience? And I think that we can learn an awful lot that applies to climate change. And the first and probably the most important thing I would say folks can take away from this is just simply that things that seem unimaginable, things that are unimaginable, can actually happen. So we know, for example, that we've always known that a pandemic like this is possible, and yet apparently we didn't on some emotional level believe that because we weren't prepared. And before that, before 9/11, we knew that terrorism could happen, and yet we weren't prepared for that either. And it's hard, I think, for folks to imagine terrible events if you've never experienced one. Well, now we've all experienced one. And so I think we can translate that lesson to the consequences of climate change. Yeah. And climate change is already, in fact, producing terrible events. And yeah. It's, I think, going to be easier for folks to imagine that having experienced this pandemic.
Yeah. So what are the opportunities we have at this moment to take some positive steps toward reducing CO2 emissions while also addressing the immediate economic and healthcare needs of the world population?
Well, first of all, the economic slowdown, I mean, this is not a good way to reduce CO2 emissions. It's a terrible way to reduce CO2 emissions. But the economic slowdown is certainly reducing emissions, but that will be short term. In longer term, an economic stimulus bill could help to drive decarbonization, for example, by funding deployment of low-carbon infrastructure. Now, it seems that the bill that is either now being considered or were just passed doesn't do that, but there may be other stimulus bills in the near future, and perhaps one of those would.
So what do you see as the key pieces to an effective government response to COVID-19 that could also be applied to a government response to climate change?
Well, no, that's a great question. I mean, I think in some sense, all of the fundamentals of the of responding to the two crises are the same. We need strong leadership. We need leadership informed by science, informed by experts. We need massive mobilization of both public and private resources. We need global cooperation. And one of the things that's interesting is that how, in my mind, is how limited actually people's behavioral changes have been in response to what's actually a fairly dire threat. And this suggests that significant behavior changes probably require government action rather than being purely voluntary. You know, something else that's, well, a clear lesson from coronavirus, which also does apply to climate change, is that acting early prevents suffering and death. Now, unfortunately, in both cases, both coronavirus and climate change, I think we've really missed that opportunity.
Yeah. Now, how hard will it be for individuals and our leaders to shift attention away from such an immediate and unprecedented emergency and focus on climate change?
Well, I don't think that's going to happen. I think people are going to be focused on coronavirus, and and perhaps that's appropriate. I'll say two things. One is that while everyone else is focused on coronavirus, and again, perhaps appropriately, my organization, Woodsville Research Center, and many, many others are continuing to do our work and make sure that progress on containing climate change does continue. The other thing I would just point out is that while it seems difficult to imagine now, coronavirus is going to pass, and it's going to pass pretty quickly. It'll probably be gone in a matter of months. And when coronavirus does pass, climate change will still be the number one challenge of the 21st century.
Yeah. Are climate scientists able to track and quantify how the pandemic is impacting the CO2 emissions? And if so, how could that data help us strategize later?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm sure that this will be measured and analyzed. And CO, you know, greenhouse gas emissions are certainly reduced. Air pollution, particulate pollution, is certainly reduced as a result of just a slowdown of human activity. There's many other changes as well that are happening, perhaps, for example, changes in how humans are impacting ecosystems. And I'm sure scientists will find interesting things to study about this. I mean, the challenge may be that we can't actually get out, or at least it's very difficult to actually get out and make any measurements. I'll just give an example. I remember shortly after 9/11, global air travel was shut down for 4 days, I think. It was something like 4 days. And there was a couple of interesting studies done of the effect of aircraft contrails, or at least the absence of aircraft contrails, on climate. So I'm sure that there will be similar interesting research opportunities out of this epidemic.
And you mentioned some of the things that we'll need to make any progress, and it sounds like you need a whole lot of cooperation across, you know, a lot of points. Is it even possible to get the ear of politicians, even those who are progressive and have called for climate action at a time like this?
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, right now, obviously, the United States Congress, anyway, has been preoccupied, and appropriately so, with passing an economic stimulus bill and other measures. But we'll see how long that distraction lasts, and when and if they get back to normal business. And you know, one of the things I'm concerned about is that there's actually some pending legislation which is not what I would characterize as bad climate legislation. And I am concerned that this may go through the Congress while everyone else is distracted by the epidemic.
And what is this legislation that you're speaking of that you think is bad legislation?
Well, there's you know, this sounds crazy, but coming from someone who leads an organization that is all about natural climate solutions, but there's this bill called the Trillion Trees Act, which is about planting trees. And it's being promoted as climate legislation, but it seems like, and we're actually trying to do a scientific analysis of the effects of this bill right now, but it seems like it would be, it's frankly more about timber harvesting rather than helping climate change. And so, we think that there's a number of problems with that legislation, but essentially that it's more of a giveaway to the forest products industry than it is really an effective piece of climate legislation.
Kind of looking ahead, maybe I'm wondering if you see a silver lining here we're seeing this reduction in CO2 emissions. I think we read something about, you know, even the air in China has cleared up so much. Do you think, though, that these types of things and these things that we'll be able to point to will have more people looking at climate change and realizing, you know, how big of a problem this is? You know, a lot of people are kind of in denial. Do you think this will open some eyes?
Well, as I said, I think that the experience of just living through a calamitous global event, I hope, stimulates people's imagination so that they can better grasp the seriousness of climate change. You know, the other thing that's interesting is to what extent there will be permanent behavior changes resulting from this experience. For example, a lot of people now are telecommuting. I strongly suspect that some of them will continue to do that after it ceases to be necessary. And of course, also there's a dramatic reduction, or if not a cessation, in business travel. And you know, we're all spending all day on Zoom, or at least a lot of us are. And I suspect that some of that will also become permanent, and that may tend to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Although I will say that it's not completely clear to me that that telecommuting actually does do that, because I'm noticing that as I spend more and more time around the house, I'm certainly using more energy here. I mean, normally I only heat half of my house. But since I'm home and I've set up an office in the other half, now that half of the house, I've turned the heat on. So that's an increase in energy use.
Right. Congress struggled to pass the COVID-19 response package. Were there any climate action related components to what the House and Senate have agreed upon?
I don't think so. I mean, we were busy analyzing the legislation last night. I don't think there's anything in there that moves us forward on climate change. I also don't think that there's anything in there that moves us backward, such as subsidies for the fossil fuel industry.
Is there anything individuals could be doing in this moment to promote climate action, you know, without appearing callous toward the health and economic welfare of others?
Well, I would say that climate action is protecting the health and welfare and economic welfare of others. Well, I think we can all reflect on the lessons. We can. A lot of folks have more time on their hands than normal, and it's a good opportunity to learn more about climate change. And actually, Woods Hole Research Center, to that end, Woods Hole Research Center is going to start offering weekly webinars. I think our first one will be next Wednesday.
Right. Phil Duffy is the president and executive director of the Woods Hole Research Center. We'll post a link with more information at our website, capeandislands.org. Phil, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.